if 13 is unlucky, then 12 and 14 are guilty by association. Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Same Old Wombles. Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us responsible for bringing you Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated and non-partisan. We're the Same Old Wombles. My only feeling about superstition is that it's unlucky to be behind at the end of the game. My name is Mark Lewis, lifelong Wimbledon fan, definitely eaten too much pizza and watched too much rugby in the last week. Joining me on tonight's panel, we have Matthew Cooper, Adam Proctor, and Niall Cooper. On tonight's show, we'll be reflecting on the last two games, talking a little bit about the Don's Trust Board election hustings, and we'll wrap up talking about the World Cup, why it's wrong, but maybe we'll still watch it. And of course, some numbers, because what would Adam do if there weren't any numbers at the end of the quiz? Welcome to episode 13.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Oh, Mark. Beautiful as ever. I love it. And I mean, I don't know what drugs you're on, but it's perfect. I love the fact that the poor number 12 and 14. I mean, like, why not all numbers? I mean, where did you get this from? What have you been reading? What calendar is it from that you're reading all this stuff from? And also,
didn't you give us
a little bit of a you know, an insight into your stalking by giving a little bit of a description about us beforehand? Are we stopping doing that description?
I got told off for doing that.
Oh,
by Matt?
No. Only the stalking. It was disturbing, Niall.
I have to say, Ryan, if you are going to make all numbers guilty by association, obviously, being the way you know how I think about all these things, pi itself should be exempt. Because although it technically is a number, it's also part of one of the most favourite bits of Plough Lane. So pi is an exempt. All the other numbers, fine. Guilty by association, but pi exempt. Just putting it out there.
Doesn't pi include all the numbers ever?
It includes a lot of numbers, but it goes on for a long time, Matt. So you kind of get bored.
How many decimal points?
When you say it goes on for a long time, do you mean infinite?
Could be technically infinite. Yeah, that's true, Matt.
I can't believe that after a week when we've actually continued on what is now a six-game unbeaten run, you start the pod by talking about pi.
Mathematical pi.
And not the pi that people would have thought associated with football.
Precisely. You can talk about my pie, but, you know, nothing else relating to pies.
Well, 3.1417, just to start you off.
So this time last week, we barely talked about the Orient game because the expectation level was down at about 2.5%.
We absolutely
stormed them. I'm putting it out there now, that was the best performance and the best night I've been involved with or even just seen and enjoyed and experienced since we came back to Plough Lane.
It's the best game at Plough Lane. I can't think. I mean, there was the Oxford game, wasn't there? Bolton. They were a couple of cracking games. But as for having so low expectations, then being so high far in the league, it was just immense.
Harry Pell was brilliant.
Pell was amazing.
Harry Pell was on a different level. And it was just that kind of old, you know, really passionate, everybody going for it, you know, bodies being thrown in the line, bit of the old-fashioned long ball, bit of niggle, you know, it's a brilliant classic, under the light sort of game, you know, real great London derby, and we won, which is awesome. As I said to a couple of people, I will resign regularly now, because it appears to be that's the solution for us winning games, not going unbeaten. Ever since I resigned, unbeaten run. Clearly.
I think actually Alex Woodyard being in the team has rather more to do with it than anything you may have done off the field, my friend.
Well, you say that, Mark, but I think it's a solution.
Alex Woodyard and Harry Pell, right, clearly were being influenced by my involvement in the board, and that's why they weren't doing well enough. And, like, you know, Davidson wasn't really showing any form. But since I've quit, that's had a massive influence on the football matters on the pitch, because that's what the Don's Trust Board is all about. So if at any point you feel we're struggling, you know, either of you two actually do get elected, then I suggest resign straight away, because you will have influence on the matters on the pitch, because that's what it's all about. That's what the Don's Trust Board have massive influence over, as you well know, because we've talked about this before.
Nice to know that we had so much credibility on this pod beforehand that Niall's just, you know, entirely lost anything we may possibly have had.
I'm sorry, everybody. I can't help myself sometimes.
The most important question for Niall is, if Nick Zanef was playing badly with three at the back, was a confidence keeper, what is he now that he's probably actually genuinely getting a clean sheet bonus?
Well, apart from me resigning. No, okay, I'll stop that. It's not funny, really. I actually think that Tyler has helped give a bit more confidence in that team, in the back four. And Zanef is not a bad shot stopper. But I just think...
No, everything you say about Zanef is right. He is a confidence keeper. Yeah, so and right now, his confidence is sky high. And yeah. As such, I mean, like some of the saves I saw against Salford, he pulled off some... What I found was quite weird is I noticed the team of the week came out, and it was their keeper that was number one. Jack Curry was in the side, but their keeper apparently.
Really? Okay. I watched it on iFollow or whatever. I don't remember their keeper doing very much. But there we go.
There was also a midweek game. Remember, it's not just us.
Oh so, yeah. Like, okay. That's true. That's true of the week.
But Matt's right. Zanetti's a confidence goalkeeper. When his confidence is up, he does brilliantly. If you make some mistake, then it's like calamity land. But a long, 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 long time ago, I played a bit in goal, and it used to be the same, you know, because you're exposed. If you make a mistake as a goalkeeper, then it's like everybody notices it. You make a mistake as like a left midfielder, or, you know, there's people behind you. So it's easier to cover it up than it is as a goalkeeper. That's what happens. And Dana very squarely is in that category. What I remember is there's a story about Dave Besson. In Dave Besson's debut, he had an absolute howler, let one for his legs, whatever, played really, really, really shit. And Dave Bassett realised that was going to be the make or break of a young goalkeeper coming to the team. And he spent a lot of time with Dave Besson in that first week saying, right, these things happen. It's not your fault. You will be a good goalkeeper. You will come through it. And that's the strength of having a really good manager that puts it down, because goalkeepers are so exposed. So that's, I think, you know, and I think Dave Besson went on and did all right, personally.
Oh, yeah, maybe, you know, World Cup squad, played for England a couple of times after he left Wimbledon, obviously, unfortunately.
And that was the case of all that bloody team then. Everybody thought we were a bunch of useless players. And then if you look at that...
Oh, there's a quiz question. There's a quiz question. Did Warren Barton play for England whilst a Wimbledon player or not?
Yes, half an hour.
In which game?
Ireland away.
Ireland.
The one that got called off, correct?
Yes.
Even I know that.
But then he got called into the England squad after he was transferred to Newcastle. Before he played for Newcastle, he then played for England. Before he'd even played, he was transferred to them already in the close season.
What's that second bit was pointless, Mark. I mean, interesting. No, actually, no, not interesting, because I'm a Wimbledon fan. So, like, as soon as he went to Newcastle United, he was lost to me.
But it's interesting, though, isn't it? Because I would still claim Dave Besson from 1990 as us, even though he'd gone, even though he was at Newcastle. I actually must have been one of the few people that watched the third, fourth place playoff, because he played in goal for England in 1990.
So had he been a Wimbledon goalkeeper, we wouldn't have lost that game.
Whereas I have a work colleague who's a Chelsea fan, and he claims Dennis Wise is a wonderful player, and thinks Besant's absolute shit. And I had to point out to him that just because he's old enough to have watched Besant at that point, you know, Wise would be nowhere unless Wimbledon had actually rescued him as a 17-year-old that was released by Southampton. And some bloke called Bassett put him in the first team.
Wise was brilliant at tripping himself over, though. Do you remember that?
Back in the day, it's the way it is.
I know. I mean, you know, love watching him. But then, you know, who do you prefer watching, Wise or Hodges?
Oh, Hodges every day and twice on Sundays.
Exactly.
But who was more consistent and achieved more in the game? Wise, obviously.
Well, Wise, I mean, it was known, wasn't it? I mean, Hodges was great, a wonderful player, but was contributed 75% of our goals.
I remember watching Hodges score a hat trick, which is amazing in itself. He actually scored shot three times in a game.
So this is what happens when you get the same old Wombles. It starts off, it's like Orient.
I'm going back to Leighton Orient. I'm going back to Leighton Orient because genuinely the crowd, especially the mover stand, have been fantastic all season. And let's face it, we've all had a lot of dross to watch. But it really felt like a little bit with the Harrogate game, but there was still a lot of dross in that game. But Orient was the first 90-minute consistent game that the crowd and the team, and obviously the crowd as a result of what the team performed, were up for it from minute one to minute 99 and a half, or however long the referee played, injury time was. And they were fantastic once again. And you know, fair play to them all over the stand, because it makes for a much better atmosphere. And loads of different people around us I didn't know, I was like, you know, bantering with and celebrating with. And there was one guy who's in a slightly different angle, sits to the right of me. He started celebrating a Sal's goal before it even went in from my angle. I couldn't see it go in, but I could hear him cheer. It's the most amazing feeling when you know that a goal's happening. We had the same thing at Wembley, because we were right behind the goal when Lyle scored the first goal in the playoff final. So we started celebrating. A mate of mine who was standing next to me is a Norwich fan, my mate Dave. He started celebrating because he saw it. He saw the angle and he saw it going past the keeper before we did.
Fascinating, Mark.
How long have you had glasses? Just saying. Has it been? Did you not have your glasses on at all in either of those games? Just to have interest.
I think the one thing though, I'm just thinking the reason I reckon we're going back to the 80s is because it feels like suddenly we've become Wimbledon. Recently, we've become Wimbledon. We're harder in the tackle. Pell is really stepping up. And I love it that the away fans were saying how crap it was. How can you have this player on your side? I love that. That's the sort of player I wanted. And you've got Davison up front who is like really giving it some. So it just, I mean, it's unfortunate, I think, for a lot, but it's in our DNA. This is the Wimbledon way. And JJ's found it. And it's great.
I love Pell giving it large. I love the bit when they had that free kick and Pell was just like, just dancing in front of the goalkeeper, stopping him, like actually lining the wall up properly. I love the fact he was charging in. I love Davison for like running around like a headless up front. You know, we know those are sort of, those, that thing, it's that spine. We've not had the spine in the team properly for a very long time. I still think we need to sort out, have a really good, strong centre-back. Tyler's sort of there, but like, that might be it. But that, having that spine back in, that's what you want, that really robust element for the middle of the team. That's what Wimbledon's about. You know, imagine if we got NYC back playing off Davison and you had the luxury of a Sal being on the wing cutting in. I mean, that feels like pretty cool to me. You know, and that can't be that far off. NYC is only a couple of weeks off, yeah. What?
We've got Pierce coming back, haven't we, as centre-back. So he's going to cover. And Adam, I don't know what you think about that, because I don't think we were that sure about him, to be honest with you, to start with. Is he going to get back in straight back in the side? What do you reckon, Adam?
I'm not sure, actually. I totally agree with what you guys have said in terms of we're back to sort of a more of an 80s style Wimbledon. I guess my worry with that is that that we're getting lots of yellows, and that could have an impact on our, because we have very little depth, you know. So, you know, I think they seem to dish the yellows out a lot more than they have. There was a few, you know, there was a Sal got a silly one in the Leighton Orient game. A few more got dished out at the Salford game, I think, if I remember rightly. So, yeah, I think a few players coming back will be good. I mean, obviously, and Zach Robinson is performing really, really well. I know he's on a season loan. I don't know what the recall rules are in that regard. But, yeah, I think if we just need to, we've got to be careful a little bit. That's my only worry, because, yeah, the Leighton Orient game was fantastic. Mainly for me, it was fantastic because the linesman, the referee, was so terrible that I had no voice by the end of the evening, which was just driving me absolutely bananas. But yeah, I kind of like that. That gets me even more excited.
But if the linesman and the referee are useless, as they were, and there are a couple of quite cynical challenges by the opposition team in the first half. And Archibald, their right winger, was basically trying to rough up Curry like he thought he was some little schoolboy. And Curry was just standing up for it the whole time. That's what gets the crowd going. That's what gets the crowd on your side, not on your back, because they're on the referees, they're on the linesman's side. I mean, at one point, the linesman gave offside against the Sal because the Sal was quick enough to run past the last defender, and he still flagged him, which was just so incredible.
That was phenomenally bad. But I think you're right. Jack Curry has the making of being a Wimbledon legend because of that sort of, these people are going to kick the hell out of me because I'm actually making them look like Muppets, but I'm going to stand up and not retaliate. I'm just going to be able to do it and get on, dust myself off, get on and go. And I remember the guy's like, what is he, 18, 19 still? You know, there's a lot to come from Jack Curry. And he's just going to get smarter and smarter about dealing with those people like Archibald, who was an utter, and just to stop Adam having to bleep me out, I'll not say it, but like that's what he was. You know, he just, you know, he deserved me to be, the fact that he was on the pitch at the end of the game was amazing, Archibald. You know, they took him off, actually substituting, but like, you know, he should have been sent off. And there were a number of players like that in the O's team. But, you know, you just saw that. Yeah, I was really impressed with Jack Curry for that reason as well.
I hope he doesn't lose that, Jack Curry. I think there was that brilliant bit of video, wasn't there, where Bradford had equalised against us and their player ran straight at Jack Curry, was shouting in his face. And Jack Curry was just like, you know.
Without meaning to spoil a really good story, because it is a good story, that was actually Ogundore on his debut. But the same principle applies, because they're both really young players.
Oh.
And I guess Ogundore is going to get a chance now for the next few weeks while Gunter's away.
That obviously, as a Welshman, you know, you haven't got... Now, where'd I go with this? Gunter is playing for Wales. We get more money.
Oh, save that to later on.
All right.
One final thing I wanted to wrap up on Orient, because, you know, Salford away, 0-0 isn't all that, but it's another clean sheet, which is positive in itself. But off the field, obviously, there were some afters with the flare being thrown by the Orient fans. There's a video going around that is taken from the Orient end of the way in which the stewards waded in, which wasn't big or clever, whether it's our grand or anyone else. But I did like, you know, there's lots of statements here, there and everywhere about different things, as we know. I did like the statement the club made. They seem to have been very clear, very decisive about exactly what's going on. And the fact they're working with in the future, they'll be working with new stewarding, different stewarding arrangements and organisations, I think is a sensible step forward. Because by the sound of it, that's not the first time there's been issues in the home and the away end with the stewarding company we were using.
I think that is one of the first examples you've got of Danny McFadden. Because it is that is being more decisive and making sure that we act fast and do things properly. And when issues arise, that's going to be dealt with much faster. So, you know, certain things that happen in the rest of the season, I think with a Danny Macklin person at the top, will just be addressed very, very, very fast when they're about crowd issues or when they're about being decisive on all sorts of issues. I think that was a very good sign. The fact that it was so fast and so quick and dealt with in the way that it should have been done. So, you know, big up for the club for acting so fast. You know, people jump in and criticise when they don't. And I think they did exactly the right thing in exactly the right manner. And I think that this is another really good example of the correct direction that the club is going in off the pitch. You know, I think that's, there's a lot of good things happening there. So, you know, I think that's it's a really good thing. You know, and that was one of the things that was identified that has changed. So, you know, it's a good thing. Sorry, Ad.
No, not at all. I think, yeah, I mean, I thought obviously, clearly there must have been some other things going on, because you don't just suddenly change your whole stewarding outfit through one incident necessarily, unless it's a really, 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 really bad. I will obviously, I'll link to the YouTube video that's from the Orient end. Also, what I do want to do though is I'm going to make a slightly slow-mo clip of Gunter's off the line header, although it was technically, it looked like it was going wide from what I could tell, just because it's such a cool moment. So people can kind of see that. I mean, yeah, I was really pleased that they made that decisive decision. I don't know all the ins and outs, obviously, only from the statement, but clearly there was problems. The video, from my point of view, when I looked at it from the was videoed from the Leighton Orient's end, looked like the stewards were a bit heavy-handed instantly in some capacity. But I mean, I'm literally watching 30 seconds worth of video. Although they big it up as a massive fight when it's not that. I mean, I'm glad I was nowhere near it, but it wasn't a massive fight in that sense. But the funny thing about that video, even if you don't watch it all, is that the guys who did it at the end, they're like, this is the best away game we've ever been to. They were miles away from the kind of rucking kickoff, but they clearly like loved the atmosphere, even though they were, you know, they came out of the worst at the end of the match. So yeah, I am pleased. I'm hoping some decisive decisions happens with the speed of tea at halftime. If Evie continues to ask me for cups of tea, that would be my next thing I'd ask Danny to sort out. But, you know, let's do one thing at a time. I'm sure stewarding is more important. Ah, actually, and I've just remembered the other bit I was thinking. It's been a long weekend already. I am hoping, so the steward... I'm guessing if the stewards have changed, it's all the stewards, right? And I think I said on one of the podcasts about the fact that some stewards at another game, when we had fans who clearly had paper tickets, didn't know where they were sitting, they didn't understand the seating arrangement. So I also hope that the new stewards we get in not only are better at dealing with people who are causing problems, but also understand where seats are, because that would be also very useful and make people feel more friendly. So, yeah, all good.
One of the things we mooted a while back, which is probably worthwhile, people standing on the Don supporters to raise, was the idea of a Don's maker, like you had a Games Maker at Commonwealth Games. So actually having people whose job it is to welcome people into the stadium, be really friendly and opening, and make it feel like instantly a friendly environment, because they know this ground, they know the stadium. That sort of thing, I think, is really worthwhile exploring, because it's about making the ground a welcoming place. And I think you could do that both home and away ends. You know, really actually kind of going, you know, welcome, this is Plough Lane. You do it to away fans. I mean, this is Plough Lane, hope you enjoy it. Here's where you can get stuff, you know, actually being really like a kind of informative guide and that sort of stuff. That is, you know, something we've mooted before, and I think it could be an interesting one to explore.
Yeah, it's a sensible point. And I have to say, actually, big up to the Orient fans, because not only were they saying really nice things about Danny Macklin, because obviously he used to be in charge there, but they were also really complimentary about the fact that they could do simple things, because I was down there selling programmes pretty much. And the fact we were able to pay by card and pay in cash, simple thing, but, you know, simple thing. We managed to agree with the club in conjunction with the programme sellers themselves. We thought this would be a logical thing to do. And apparently at Orient, you can't do that. You just can't do that. You have to pay it by card, and that's it. No cash accepted whatsoever, so that's unfortunate for them.
I think it's very good. It's very well to be generous to another club when you're like a million points top of the league.
True, but they weren't patronising to us. They were just decent. You know, they were saying this is a nice little tight ground. Unlike what some of the comments happened afterwards online, and they were quite rude about the ground. But I'm not sure that Brisbane Road is necessarily in the greatest of nick, but there we go.
And I like, Niall, the games, the idea of like a Don's Makers, I like that. I like that. I genuinely thought you were going to follow on from Adam and talk about orange juice again. But
you know my view on orange juice. You'll know my view on orange juice. That's it. It's up there with confidence goalkeeping.
They're living on the ceiling.
Mate, you can only get orange juice in the posh seats. You can't get orange juice downstairs.
We don't sit in the posh seats.
Because your daughter works up there.
They're having some time off right now, so they're not working there right now.
There you go.
But now they're old enough so they can serve alcohol. Anyway, moving along, we have a obviously by the time people are listening to this, either tonight or later on today, whatever, we have an FA Cup replay, and how we've gone from the sublime of the sublime low of the Weymouth away performance to the massive high of the Orient game. Who knows what might happen in the replay, but I guess we're a hell of a lot more confident than we were 7 days ago that we can actually have a comfortable, not particularly traumatic evening tomorrow and see off Weymouth and progress to the second round.
I'm really worried about this, right? Because I'm worried about this one because Amelia went to the Leyton Orient game, absolutely loved it, spent most of the game looking at the south stand thinking that is the place to be. It's bouncing, it's like absolutely buzzing. So I have got her tickets in the middle of the south stand just behind the goal, right, with her friends. So there's two of them going to the south stand to experience it. So what I'm worried about is if it's a damp squib and we absolutely mess up, I'll put her in like one of the kind of like central places. So that's my nervousness. You know, I believe in the football gods, right? So if we go in and start doing any predictions or anything like we're going to do this or we're going to do that, it's like, you know, I watch Matt's play for a reason. Well, for many reasons, but Matt's play does include the football gods. And you know, you can't offend them. You can't say, oh, Weymouth, it'll be, I'm not even going to say it because it's just too dangerous.
Okay, I'm not going to make any predictions because I don't want to upset Niall in that sense, because he seems to believe in something very strange. But anyway, it's all good. I'll let him carry on with that. But I got to admit, like, it'll be fantastic in that end anyway, because it's an FA Cup game. It's at home. We've got a replay. I think it'll be buzzing from the get-go. I also think, actually, that... I don't know what was said to the squad or how they thought they were going into the Weymouth game, but I suspect they thought it'd be a bit of a walk in the park. And of course, Weymouth came out, like I said before, guns blazing, and that kind of unsettled everyone. And it was another level of sort of play. So I think there's going to be quite a clear mandate to say you have to play this like it's, you know, one of the top, like Leyton, like it's Leyton Orient, you know, or whatever. And because it's important to kind of keep that run going. So I can't go, but I am optimistic about the atmosphere and all that kind of stuff. I'm gutted we're not on TV. I really thought, based on the Solent commentary that was happening for the first game, was that we would definitely be on TV because it just sounded insane. But maybe they've decided that we'll probably play it a bit cooler and actually play to our strengths. But yeah, I'll say no more than that.
I think playing for strength, the one thing which is upsetting is we can't play Hudley, because I think this is his game.
Oh, of course it is, because Zeki's two for nothing. But you know, at least we know now that we can't play Hudley, and you know, it was covered post-match that unfortunately Huddersfield wouldn't release him and so on, and that's just the way it is. And we don't know whether or not Hudley will last beyond January, and if he doesn't and we get Robinson back, well, Robinson's scoring bunch of goals. They're totally different strikers, to be honest. But you know, Robinson, based on the clips I've seen, knows what the goal is, and that's the important thing. So fingers crossed we get through to the second round, and then if we get a decent run there, then we're through to the third round and Robinson can play in the third round for us. And then by then NYC will be fit, match fit. And yeah, then it's actually looking that much better in terms of actually having options to bring off the bench that are worthwhile. So moving forward, just this last weekend, yesterday in fact, there were three different sessions, which were the unofficial hustings, and they were put out earlier on today on the Samuel Wombles podcast platform. That's all we did. We gave them a platform. Obviously, Adam was involved in them, and I was involved in different sessions as well, so... How do you think it went, Adam? How did you feel about it all? And are you more or less confident than you were before as a result of the hustings?
I know I'm more confident generally because I've listened to all of them, obviously, and I was in the one that I was in, and I thought that everyone gave a really good account of themselves. So in terms of confidence, I felt there was lots of really good people that could kind of, you know, join the board, kick it on and fill the gaps that have appeared. Be that me, you, anyone else, you know. So that for me was really good. I mean, as much as I read all the manifestos, the level of enthusiasm that you get from people talking is really good. And so it tweaked a bit of my thoughts about who else I would want to vote for. Got me kind of thinking a little bit about people's different points of view, just because I thought in my group, I really liked the enthusiasm. So I was pleased about that. I mean, I got a bit stressed out by the fact the questions came in advance. So that freaked that I spent way too much time thinking about all the questions in advance and then panicked and decided that's not how I roll, because I am quite good at just kind of know, I know what I want to say and whatever, but yeah, I get, sometimes get stressed because I think I don't want to make a mistake. But, and I have to, I mean, again, I said it to people in, I thought Chris in my group was really good. I thought some of the, I think I said it, I think I said it in one of my answers about the fact that many of us were agreeing, but just using different words. So I thought, yeah, I really enjoyed some of the stuff that Chris had talked about in terms of connecting with younger fans and thinking about the way we engage fans. And I thought, you know, I was upset. I can't remember which game it was. One game I didn't get a program. It wasn't the Leyton Orient game, but I can't remember which one it was. And I was just like, oh, I made a mistake there. But of course, that's very rare. I mean, Chris talked about the fact that young people come in and buy programs, and probably they don't, which is fair. I buy the programs, but I hardly read any of the program just because I feel like I should buy the program. But actually, maybe there's other ways we can do things. So yeah, you know, this. I really enjoyed it, to be honest. I mean, Mark, you were obviously in a different session to me, and the groupings were all kind of mixed up and whatever. I mean, how did you enjoy your session?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I don't think at the time I did. I think at the time when you're doing something like that, it's a bit like a job interview. Even if you may know the faces and some of the individuals involved, some I knew, some I didn't, you still feel like you're in a job interview and you want to say the right thing. You want to speak slowly enough. And then obviously you've only got an allotted amount of time, which is fair, so that everybody has the same level of time. I thought the questions were sensible. I thought the questions were probing. And hopefully whoever, as a Donstrasse board member, listens to the hustings has an opportunity listening to them to get to know some of the individuals. I thought everybody on I've listened to all three of them now, but really I thought all the different candidates that were able to attend the hustings and voice their ideas and so on did so very eloquently, very politely, very respectfully. And you know, if that's an example, which hopefully it is, of how they would interact with each other, with whoever gets onto the board and obviously the existing board members, that's a really good thing, because there's so many ideas, there's so much passion, there's so much determination, there's so much belief. And understandably, there's been a lot of rancor, so to speak, in certain places and certain positions, and there are disaffected people, and we understand why they're disaffected. But the people that are prepared to put themselves forward to be on the board are doing so genuinely and correctly and appropriately, and they've all got professional experience in different ways and different sectors and different sides of things. They'd all go about it in slightly different ways, but I think, you know, they all come across very well and obviously gave a good account of themselves, which means people can judge appropriately based on that, based on the individuals they may know, based on the manifestos, whether or not they're appropriate. I have to genuinely say I voted myself today, and I probably, well, no, I could genuinely have voted for more than seven candidates, you know, which is quite an unusual situation overall when you've got that many votes.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I was going to say on that, just because, I obviously there's 13 people, there's only seven spaces, all that kind of stuff, was one of the things I said in my group was the fact that I wanted to re-listen to a lot of the answers the other people had said, because there was lots of good ideas. And I'm kind of hoping that, I'm sure the Donstrasse board as stands will listen to all of those and just kind of, you know, make a note of those kind of things, and also maybe follow up with those individuals who don't get elected to the board to say, hey, this was a good idea. What about joining one of the theme groups? Would you like to be able to maybe send us a document about how you might approach this? That kind of stuff. So again, I think it showed, which I've sort of touched on a little bit, that we do have a wider fan base that could really input with all the things that the Don's Trust is doing, the board is doing, the club is doing, and take advantage of those things appropriately, obviously. And so, yeah, I was like, I need to go back and listen to this to sort of make some notes and say, okay, those are good ideas. We don't want to lose those in the ether. So yeah, it was, like you said, it was a bit stressful because it was a bit like an interview in lots of ways, and you don't want to say the wrong things. But I did enjoy it. I was like, I'm tired now. I was tired yesterday. Also, I had to get the things out online, so I was like having to re-listen to them straight away and sort of make sure they were. They weren't edited, obviously, as we already said. We just trimmed up the front where it was the preamble and made sure the end where people were thanking each other was gone. But yeah, it was kind of a bit like get the things up as soon as we said they would be up. So that was a little bit of extra pressure for me, but there we go.
I mean, I'd say, so one thing for me was that hearing the energy and taking on Adam's point, that needs to be, people need to say, right, okay, I've got this energy. And if I don't get on, then, you know, get involved with the theme groups, really push that on. And hopefully other people who are listening will feel inspired, going, this is a really good idea, and step forward. Because it's like, the club is only as strong as the fans that are in it. And we need to kind of use that energy and build that forward. I'll be honest, right, with me, because we were under so much pressure to make sure it was completely fair, there was probably a bit boring because it was so formulaic. It was so regimented. Everybody saw the questions beforehand. Everybody was given exactly the same amount of time. I had absolutely no input to the questions, which as a trained journalist, who's my job, that's what my job was, for like on a national newspaper for 5 years, to be able to have no input is like utterly frustrating, because I would have torn you all apart and had fun enjoying doing it. So that's what I used to do. I was one of those horrible hatchet journalists that loved like laying into people. I couldn't do any of that. So it's all like really, sorry, these are like really well-organized, thought out, thorough questions, really ridiculously fair, everybody in the same time, no kind of encouragement of arguing amongst each other. You all got on. It was like ESG heaven, I would have thought. I'd have probably looked at it, because it couldn't be any more fairer. And it's like, oh, do you know what I mean? Had I run it, it would have been like, bloody.
I don't think it needed to be like that.
No,
I think it's done really well. I don't think there needs to be any sense of antagonism or digging into things or go, Mark, you said that, but do you remember this tweet you posted in 2019? I think it was a good thing. I also think it was good to have the questions in advance, because we're not trying to trick people up, or, you know, I think
Matt, just to pick up, it wasn't we. None of us knew anything about any of it.
Yeah, that's a great thing. So none of us, we just gave a platform. I mean, me and you weren't chairs of any of it. It was all other people. So it's just the same old Wombles giving that platform, this amazing, wonderful podcast, soaring up the charts.
Modestly
brilliant. Able to give a platform for people to speak. A majority of people did, which is great. So people could listen to that. And read their stuff on the, you know, their manifestos elsewhere.
We spoke to, Nick Draper's probably going to hate me saying, we did speak to Nick Draper about coming on and doing and getting involved with doing the question, you know, coming on being a host and doing the questions. And he also reached out to Aaron Paul. So there were lots of people from, you know, from the 9 years that we were trying to get involved as well. So that for me was about trying to bring that platform, because obviously 9 years have done a great job historically on hosting the hustings, and because of the logistics of it, they couldn't do it. And it was like, well, we need to have some sort of hustings. So, you know, we'll try and make it as fair as we possibly could. And, you know, I'd imagine in years to come, you know, the 9 years, same old Wombles, mind you, it depends on whether any of these two get elected, might want to try and do something together or you know, do something else that kind of brings that all. Because it's like, you know, that's what you want to do. You want to make it as fair and as transparent as possible. And obviously, if other people want to host hustings, there's nothing stopping them from doing it. Historically, all the hustings, even the 9 years ones, were officially unofficial. So like, you know, that's where it always was been. I mean, 9 years is still an unofficial channel. You know, so that, and they pride themselves on that. So, you know, it's just exactly. Democracy.
Exactly. I think you're right, Nye. I think other people could, if they want to. It doesn't stop anyone else doing hustings if they want to. I guess, and it's an important thing. And listen, the nine years podcasts, when they've done the hustings before, have been brilliant. That's the reason why it was so important to do it this time. And I know that they had time constraints. So, and if they do it again in the future, absolutely brilliant. I really hope that we can work, if we want to, we can work together with them and the Wombles Had a Dream. Because I think there's different voices out there, and it's great that they're all get an opportunity to be heard.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is what 9 years did in the last couple of, and what they were planning to do is to have it as a live event. and there was just no way we could do that. Like that is another level of logistics. So, you know, I think in the future, if we can, you know, the ESG, if they want to work something out that we can do something together where it's live, where you can get, you know, broader questions and whatever, fantastic. But yeah, totally. They've done a fantastic job, and I'm sure we can figure something out. And also, again, I've from the comments I've seen, and that obviously there was concerns that it would not be as independent as possible, that there might be bias, all that kind of stuff. But all the comments I've seen on Pro Boards from the various people that were involved have said, we really felt that everyone went out of their way to try and make sure that it was just as straightforward as possible. And like Niall says, potentially that made it less exciting. But also, I mean, I remember we were having a chat. It's like, do we need to debate? Like, surely it's just like, we've got some opinions. We want to have a conversation about that and hear people's opinions. We don't need to, you know, we don't need the traditional debating necessarily. But I do wonder how we might do something a bit more interactive, you know, in the future. And, you know, some sort of live stream would be fantastic. But if, like, we 9 years, Wombles had a dream, people were involved, that's a lot of people who could make it work. So there's potential to have something really exciting that's different and again, more engaging. I mean, one of the other things, just to wrap up, that I said was that we do need to fix, and a lot of people said this as well, was that we want at the next elections there to be a more diverse group of people standing to be elected. And so some of that will be making things like the hustings, the process, all those things as inclusive as possible. You know, so making sure that if you don't have access to Microsoft Office, that you can do this. You know, if you don't have access to a microphone and a webcam, you know, you can do this, because there's loads of things that make it more inclusive, you know. So, yeah.
We actually, as well, picking up on that, Adam, the format of it actually can put people off. You know, that's a way, the whole way it's done. And they you can do a lot of work in that. There will be people out there, probably some of the people in ESG, who'll be like, well, how do you actually make sure we do get a board that actually is a bit more representative of the community we serve, which it isn't going to be, because it's going to be nine blokes and one woman.
No, definitely. I mean, and the silly, you know, a silly point, and I'll let Mark jump in after this, but it's not a silly point, but it's an important point, is obviously I've read my manifesto out loud and put it on YouTube, you know, and that is so that more people have access to the materials. So for example, the deaf community, the reading age is actually a lot lower. So reading a manifesto is way more difficult. So making videos and all those kind of bits, different things allow, you know, kind of different engagements. So yeah, I mean, I think again, if we get a sign language interpreter, if we could get, you know, all those kind of bits working, that would be amazing. And I know it takes a lot of work, but then the more volunteers that are involved, the more likely we might be able to do those kind of things. Cause I think that would be fantastic.
That's point number 25 I didn't think of in terms of things that I should have possibly mentioned during my hustings. Okay, so in the proper spirit of balance, we could talk about the hustings and the election and so on all night, and we obviously will do on future episodes. There's 3 weeks left, I believe, of time when people can vote. People should have got, if they're Don't Trust Board members, they should have got their either their piece of paper to do the voting form or the election, the actual electronic information to get the voting in. And hopefully they actually managed to either renew or join the Don's Trust in time to make sure they were eligible. Unlike my father, who decided he was going to join for the very first time, didn't read the actual details, and by the time he got the information confirmed, missed the deadline. But never mind. So to round things off tonight, I thought the nice thing to do would be to talk about some tournament that's going on in a strange part of the world that is not at all associated with football. But over the next 3 weeks, and we've got important games coming up against Weymouth, against Tranmere, potentially against Chesterfield. And I think we've then got a home game against someone like Grimsby. All the international teams are going off to play some international football in the World Cup at the wrong time of year in the wrong place. So the World Cup, do we care about it? Are we going to watch it? Is it like a secret pleasure that actually, whatever we say to our friends, we're going to secretly watch all the highlights with Dion Dublin and Jermaine Genius at 11 o'clock every night?
Mark, it's so wrong. Everything about it is so wrong, but I'll be watching it. I can't not admit my love for the World Cup. I love World Cup football. I love watching the games between, you know, Japan versus Germany and any potential of those sort of upsets. I love that sort of like that sort of that element of it. So I won't lie and say I'm not going to watch any of the games. I'm going to be down at Plough Lane next Monday to watch the England versus Iran game. And I like there's a bit of it which is bringing people together, which I enjoy. So I enjoy watching football together and watching football together with people that I wouldn't normally watch football with. I watch football with you guys all the time, which is brilliant. But watching football with other people is quite nice. So there's moments of it which are brilliant, but I feel dirty. I feel dirty liking it because all of it is so wrong. I mean, there's nothing about it that's right. In a football sense, it's wrong because it's a summer tournament. And now there's just a week between the end of the Premier League and Championship season. So no one's got a chance to get fit for it. So, you know, if you get injured now, you're done. So that on a football side of it, it's wrong. But that's the minor point. People died building stadiums. Their LGBTQ thing is just unbelievable. And all praise to Joe Lycett. If you get a moment, check on the Joe Lycett Twitter feed where he's challenged David Beckham to come out and apologise for his endorsement. He's getting paid millions for endorsing the Qatari World Cup. So another round of applause to Joe Lycett, a brilliant, brilliant man. But yeah, I'm sorry. It's just, it's wrong and it should never have happened. The FIFA documentary, brilliant FIFA documentary, watch that. Because it just says where it's all started. But they just, hopefully it changes, but up until this point they haven't cared. I mean, when you were the first, you know, you watch it and you see that they did the first competition in Argentina in 78 under a military dictatorship. So they really, FIFA haven't cared. So the World Cup as a thing, I love. FIFA is utterly corrupt and wrong. Oh, we can call that a rant. That'll be my rant.
No, so I totally agree with No, that's the rant of the week for definite. I totally agree with everything that Matthew said. I guess my question, though, which I need to find out, is at the last World Cup, the BBC basically introduced a VR watching of the World Cup. I obviously have a PlayStation VR, and it's fantastic because as I've said on this podcast, and if I haven't, I probably have anyway. But I don't particularly like watching football on TV. I find it really frustrating because the cameraman doesn't do the things I want to, isn't looking at the things I want to look at, right? But in the VR thing, you are literally sitting in these World Cup stadiums and you can look around. You're in the seat in the stadium. It was amazing. I mean, the issues with it obviously was that basically it's that you can't drink any more than a small bottle of Budweiser. We're not sponsored by them, because you kind of whack your glass into the VR headset. That's annoying, right? So that's a bit weird. And of course, because you've got this big VR headset on, you can't sit with your friends, because if you invite them round, everyone's got a headset, which would be weird in itself. And so you can't actually see anyone there. So a couple of times I had people come around like, what are you watching? I'm like, I'm watching the football. But then of course they get a weird, the TV showing a weird version of the stadium, sort of atmosphere in the stadium, but you know, they're not seeing what you're seeing. And it was very odd. So that's what I need to go and check out, is the BBC doing VR for this World Cup? It was a pilot last time. I thought it was great. If it is, I've got to plug all the VR thing in, because then I can enjoy the games. In terms of everything that Matthew said, oh my word, why is the World Cup even being held at this time of year? Why is it being held in this country? Why was stuff built in the space, etc., etc.? And yeah, we know the reason. Niall was doing the universal symbol for lots of money. So yeah.
Do you know, you all know that I could talk about this at length because I've done interviews on this, broadcast media and stuff. Do I think the World Cup should be held in Qatar? Clearly, there should have been a whole thing about human rights issues when choosing a World Cup venue, because it's like, what the hell are you doing? Do I think it's wrong for us to watch World Cup games? No, I don't. I think where you've got is you've got an opportunity for the whole world to put a massive, massive spotlight on what's happened in Qatar and some of the other nations around that area. What I really hope we see is a few players doing just a few gestures around that I think would make a huge difference. Joe Lycett, he's planning to burn £10,000 in cash in front to complain about David Beckham being this and saying, right, this is what David Beckham's doing. He's just burning cash to, you know, to appease the Qataris. And it's like, in all reality, what we want is, I look at it and I see the US have just changed their badge to have the rainbow colour underneath their stripes. Instead of being the red and white stripes, it's now rainbow colour. You've got Denmark doing sedated tops, deliberately to show us marking of respect. You've got Germany looking at doing human rights protests. There's loads of stuff going on, which is phenomenal. That's where you can start making a difference, because these are icons of a national, you know, a national sport, international sport, and that's the kind of pressure on. FIFA are the guilty ones here, right? FIFA are the really guilty ones here. They should be using this opportunity. They could do calling for, I think it's like £500 million of compensation towards the constructor work, the kind of migrant workers, but actually having a permanent base there for protecting migrant workers, that legacy. So, you know, that's what you'd want football to be calling for aloud throughout this next period, to say, right, you've got to have a legacy that protects and makes sure these things don't happen again. Obviously, the whole issue of LGBTQ rights is just ridiculous. You know, and I think there'll be people pushing the boundaries to see what happens. All that said, right, I am going to watch England versus Iran. And I can tell you the whole issue is about watching Iran as well.
Yes.
As an Amnesty spokesperson, you know, some of my, you know, doing my day jobs and stuff, there's loads of issues there.
But I think the Iranian team and Iranian sports teams have been making protests themselves against the regime. So I understand that there has been some.
The whole situation with Iran is one that's going to be really difficult, because I think that it's got a huge potential for protests in Iran, because they will be allowed to watch the sport, right? And in Iran, women have been trying to watch football in the stadiums and, in you know, watching all the rest of it. So you could see a massive explosion of protests happening around during the World Cup, around the games. You know, I think that there's just so much potential for controversy and stuff like that. But then equally, what people forget is how much people love the football, because there were loads of potential protests in Russia. As a person who's like experienced about all these kind of events and looking at protests that go with it, generally everything happens before. So I think we'll just see a festival of football. So I think a lot of it, once the games start, will be sidelined. I don't think you'll see a lot of protests going on. Though I'm saying that this is such a weird World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, in this, being the summer, the fact that it's like, yeah, I mean, Matt, you probably, you know, probably got a few lawyers looking after you, some of the comments you made about FIFA. But you know, lots of other people have said the same. But you know, whatever.
Allegedly corrupt. Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's just, but I mean, you know, and England haven't been that great, but at least Harry Kane's wearing the rainbow armband. So there is things. And I think a lot of the England players are disgusted about what's going on.
I had a really lovely chat with the FA. It's weird that I should even say that. And I did say that what I really want is Harry Kane to score a hat trick and then lift up his shirt and say, "This is for the migrant workers," underneath it. That would be brilliant. Anyway, sorry, Anmark, you've had your hand up for a long time, mate.
Chances of that being quite unlikely. And talking of weird things, though, and I think we might touch on this in the pod last week, it appears that both ourselves and Charlton, even though he doesn't play for them anymore, are going to be paid for the time that Gunter is spending at the World Cup. So does this therefore mean that if the FIFA are paying every club that have the players, presumably because they're such massive assets? Now, in our case, Gunter possibly will only be with us for the rest of the season. He may or may not play for Wales whatsoever, even during the tournament. Obviously, he's first choice for us, and we wanted to keep him healthy and fit, and I'd love him to play as a half Welshman. I'd love him to play and represent his club and his country, and have another Wimbledon player playing at the World Cup after Robbie Earle. But actually, how bizarre is it that if he's there for like 20 days, we get $100,000 or something approximately to that, $5,000 a day?
I think it's $5,000 a day. So, and this wasn't budgeted for, by the way.
Go Wales.
So this is actually a benefit for us in terms of getting money that could potentially go towards a playing budget.
So we want Wales to beat England because that will mean, if that means they stay in the tournament longer.
Yeah, as a Wimbledon fan, yeah, you want Wales. It depends how much you think Gunter is going to give us points. If you think Gunter isn't, we're not going to lose that many points by not having Gunter, then Wales staying in the World Cup for as long as possible is beneficial for us because we will get more money, which we'll be able to potentially go on the playing budget.
I like this. I like this because I don't follow England in any World Cup or Euros because I just get stressed out by the nationalism and a few of the fans who I wouldn't want to be anywhere near. So I normally pick a tournament team and for the last, I don't know, 10 years or whatever, I pick Spain. But maybe, because I did live in Wales for a little while. Exactly. I think I might have to follow Wales for the whole tournament then. So I'm going to have to download the right calendar schedule.
Chris Gunter is not worth $5,000 a day for AFC Wimbledon.
No, that's what I'm saying. I want Wales to win the World Cup. No, so we have like all the money.
I'm just saying that us not having Chris Gunter is all right.
Yeah, at $5,000 a game.
A day, sorry.
Okay, that is well worth not having him in the squad, even if he is doing these amazing flying headers on the thing. I'm thinking that's a lot of money the longer the tournament goes on.
I'm just worried about whether this is going to turn out to be an Ollie Palmer moment.
Who knows? Okay, let's not dwell on that one. All right, just to wrap it up on the World Cup then, let's break the habit of a lifetime because we never make predictions on the pod. How far do we think England will get?
Quarters. We always get to the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals?
Quarters. Although I think if we get through the group, we could face Senegal. I think that's going to be a tough game. If we beat that, then it's either France one way or Argentina the other way.
Yeah. So it's not going to go long further than that, is it? Fair enough.
I've not even looked. Who is even the manager for England now? For goodness sake.
No, Adam, no. Don't endear yourself to all football fans.
Some bloke who was in the pizza advert after he missed a penalty.
Does that help?
Okay, let's round it up for the night then with some numbers just to finish off the pod. I got three simple numbers.
Adam, who's the Prime Minister?
Well, that's hard.
Well, no, that's a harder question.
This week, you question. Mean.
Yeah, right, it depends when we release the podcast, isn't it? Surely.
Absolutely. Right, okay. So.
Have we got a king or a queen, Adam?
Oh, for goodness sake, I'm not answering. I'm not here for some sort of test of being English.
Right, let's give Adam a very simple one then.
Oh, for goodness sake, every time.
Here we go.
How many verses are there in God Save the King?
Yorkshire pudding, right?
No,
what meat does Yorkshire pudding go with?
Adam's number for this week is number three.
Pork and what sauce?
Three. And this is football. This is football related, yeah?
They're all AFC Wimbledon related. The number is three. What's the question? And you've already mentioned it on tonight's pod.
Oh, you are kidding. Why would you even say that?
It's true.
It's not how many lines on the England shirt, yeah?
It's not how many lines on the English shirt. It's not that easy.
That'd be really hard for Adam, Mark.
I know.
Exactly.
Is it how many prime ministers we've had in the last year?
No, it's not how many prime ministers we've had the last year.
That's five now.
Well, it's definitely not how long it takes to get a cup of tea at half time, because that's too quick.
Topical gag.
Is it how many clean sheets Nick Xanif has had?
No, he's had four.
Three?
Nice try, though.
Two. Not goals, not minutes. There was three terrible people at the Leyton Orient game that were wearing black. is that right?
No, because there were four.
Oh, what sugar, the blimmin', the guy who holds up the number thing. Oh.
You said it yourself. We have lots of players on yellow cards, and currently we have three players on four yellow cards who, therefore, with one more, will get suspended.
Oh, my word.
That Lee Brown, Riley Towler, and Harry Pell.
Oh, kind of Harry Pell.
Yeah, that's bad. Okay.
Okay. For Matt, we have number two. And I think this has been mentioned about three times tonight.
Number two.
Number two.
The shirt that Chris Gunter's wearing, doesn't he wear two? the amount of points that Wales will end up with.
that many? Wales could well beat Iran. That's a fair point, actually, Matt.
What's happened in the last two games?
Clean sheets, Matty.
Won one and drawn one.
Clean sheets, Matt.
Two clean sheets.
Yay! I knew that. Well done, Matt. Okay, no, Niles won't get this. Niles' number is four.
Is it higher than a two?
Thank you, Brucey. Come on down.
Is it Niall? I think you'll find that all numbers are guilty by association.
Is it the number of clean sheets Nick Tanner had all year?
Well, it is the number you kept this season, but that's not it, because that's too
hard. Is it the number of really bad officials against Leighton Orient?
What did the fourth official do wrong?
Is it...
How many minutes?
Is it the amount of days between our win against Leighton Orient and our draw at Salford?
Any more intelligent guesses, anyone?
I've got these are all right, and they're all AFC Wimbledon correct. AFC Wimbledon related.
Yeah, but this one's a better stat, and it relates to finance and everything.
Relates to finance and everything.
Yeah,
and everything. Right, we'll soon find out whether it relates and everything.
You sure it's not 42? If you missed off two,
the two.
It's not the answer to life, the universe, and everything. No.
Okay, it's just football and everything, Matt. AFC Wimbledon and everything is different.
Yeah,
very much like life, the universe, but apparently that's
you're not going to get it, are you?
It's like consecutive equations.
This is when we need Alex to tell everyone off to say, just get on with the question.
All right, so if I tell you, Bradford have got 17,222.
Yes.
Swindon have got 8,811.
The fourth highest attendance, average attendance.
Fourth highest. Correct.
League two.
And who's the third?
So you said Swindon, Bradford.
Stockport.
Correct. Yeah.
8,532.
And do you know
we
what?
We are 7,418.
No, this is massive. This is massive, to be honest. It's massive in terms of everyone was like, we're going to be relegated. We're going to drop numbers. And yet we are up there. We've doubled our fans. You know, this is fantastic.
Also the budget, I think, is we're budgeting for 6,500. So that actually also means significant extra finance probably coming in. So that is really, really significant.
And you think I just make these things up, you know?
And we've not played Bradford or Stockport at home yet, have we?
No.
And who was the other one? Who's the other one in there?
Swindon.
So we've not played any of them.
I mean, the other thing to mention is what you should also look at is percent of capacity.
Yeah, true. Because I'll do that next week.
We'll be really high on that because, you know, there actually isn't many more seats we can sell because you're limited on the away fans have a certain designated amount going in, though we are being much more smarter on that, as you're seeing at Harrogate, where we're actually starting to try and split the away end, which still isn't that easy to do, but we'll be doing that more. So it means there is potential. You know, I mean, like even what we've got 7,000, just under 7,000 at Harrogate on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is like bloody good. You know, so I think the way that we're looking at it, obviously the addition of the new Doner Kebab stall behind the South Stand has clearly done the big job. Now, those who haven't tried the chicken meat there, it is awesome. That is clearly encouraging Amelia to go on Tuesday night because it's great.
Other food outlets are available.
No, but the thing that's annoying about that is we were working out what Evie wanted and I didn't see that until after we've been to the pizza place. And I was like, oh, Evie, because she loves doner kebabs. I'm like, there's a kebab. She was like, why didn't I get the kebab? I'm like, oh, no.
It is really good. I mean, it is getting difficult now because the kebab place is really good. The pizza's like safe as.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm a big big fan of My Pine.
Oh,
and
awesome.
Actually, is it Ding Dong? What, is that Ding Dong? Yeah.
The Chinese food
is really good. They just need to serve it in a bowl rather than in a wrap because it's just too messy, right? That's it.
No, but I'm going to make a shout out for the main vegan one there, because everything they do is vegan, including all the sauces, right? And then this, the Orient game, they introduce like a prawn vegan thing. Don't ask me what the prawns are. I asked the guy like twice, what are the prawns? They're obviously not prawns. But it was like in a wrap. It didn't leak all over me. It was really good. And the nice thing about that stand is that it's clearly like it's like a family run. So there's a couple of kids, you know, they are young, you know, who are really helping out, getting the thing done. And they're really, really friendly. And so, yeah, I mean, I like the tofu fish thing there. I like the new prawn thing. I can't remember what other things I've had there, but yeah.
It's great.
We need a curry. I want the food, a curry stand.
The food thing's great. And at this point in the podcast, we just need to fade out. Fade out, Adam, as we're talking about food. Just need to
bring it back to AFC Wimbledon. So I'm going to bring it back to AFC Wimbledon. That as part of the new community theme, Don's Plus Community Theme Group, one of our five objectives is to become the number one, the best in the country foodie club.
Yeah, fade out that bit.
McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken and a pizza.
Stop it.